Siren Radio.
And as well as the mollusk mystery, I know we'll also be talking about the importance of geoscience, coping with change, and possibly, just possibly, the Fame legacy. That, of course, the series Fame. Who wants to live forever? Well, Paul Rosenbaum does. And why not? Anna, would you like to quiz our ace PhD student, Josephine Westlake, who actually made her debut with the Festival of Science, the Pint of Science, that, if you recall, we were so excited about a few weeks ago. She had a special 10-minute little podcast all sorted through, and I wondered all over to the other side of the university campus to the Joseph Lang. No, it was the think tank, wasn't it?
You're based it was, at. Yeah.
The think tank, which for people who aren't aware is a part of the University of Lincoln, which is literally a tank in which a lot of people think. That's what's called a think tank, really, presumably. Would you like to quiz Josephine about her life and times and why, after graduating from the University of Leeds, she felt the only way she could see stuffed animal videos was to come to the University of Lincoln? I'll come to that later. Over to you, please, Anna.
Out of the week that you took part in the excitement, what do you think the highlight was? Was there one particular thing that stands out amongst all the excitement?
I think that the activities that we actually got to do in between the presentations were really interesting. So I set one up, which we did on naming the world's largest rivers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
and wow. The team of archaeologists were actually the stars on that day.
Really?
So yeah, I'm not sure who they are, but congratulations to the archaeologists.
Did they get Amazon then?
I'm pretty sure they got the Amazon.
Did
there
they
were
get
some
the Nile?
Very tricky ones there.
Ganges?
Yep, they were all there.
Yangtze?
Nice.
Yangtze was there. Yeah.
See, my river trivia is fascinating.
You see, this is one of the reasons, Ben, why I knew that you should have actually been there.
A bank of useless knowledge, that's what I am.
As opposed to the Star Trek planets or not planets, which is, you know, a whole new range of things from that point of view. So how did your own session go then? Were you greeted with the applause that you should have been?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting to talk about the research that I'm doing at the moment, but also because it was such a local event, I managed to sort of put a twist on it in terms of looking at the Fosdyke.
And in terms of that, Josephine, we talked about, again, the anthropomorphisation, the changes, the anthropomorphical scene which we're living in from that point of view. You're wearing a wonderful Jurassic Park T-shirt today, which is great. What is it that particularly appeals to yourself about the wonderful science of the Earth?
Well, I've actually studied it since I was really young. Always loved dinosaurs and things like that, and then space. So I've always been interested in science. And when I got to, as I got older, I started studying physics. And what I got interested in really was the physics to do with the Earth. So things like seismology, volcanology. And that led me into studying a master's in geophysical hazards at University College London. And then from there, because it was looking at hazards, this was a PhD that sounded really interesting to do with flood hazards and seeing if we could improve how flood risk assessment's done.
Makes perfect sense. Let's open it up to the team. Emily, any questions for Josephine about geoscience or such like? No, stymied by the whole thing. It's okay, because we've always got... It's nice to see that Emily following in the Eloise Sheehan footsteps of setting that bar, you know, and progressing it on there. Talk to us, Anna, please, about this... Don't worry, the animals are still alive. We're talking about stuffed as in feeding. Why did you decide to actually ascend and celebrate this particular image, which I defy any of the midweek drivettes in the studio, apart from Fergus, who can't actually see it unless he needs the whole thing, not to find this just amusing, cute, strangely bizarre, and so on?
What was my comment? I'll remember what it was when I hear my comment.
Try not to laugh. Effectively, try not to
laugh. Oh, try not to laugh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does it look like to you, in honesty?
Well, Eloise, what does that look like to you, what we're looking at present? Remember, it's radio. Use the powers of description.
It's a bunch of animals eating random items of human food. Mainly watermelon for some reason.
Horses eating watermelons?
It's adorable, actually.
You've got cats eating baby food. It's not the baby, it's okay. You've got subtitles there. I mean, you know, these are the kind of things there where you've got to turn around and say, surely, Josephine, this is. I mean, what's not to learn about a little canary, a toy pussycat, and a cat eating
the
a banana.
The cat eating the banana. So that was the classic. That was the thing that defied any common sense. Why would a cat eat a banana?
Frankly, Fergus, I'm saddened I haven't introduced the cat eating the banana into the film criticism course, or indeed the macaque monkey who's going, it's astounding. It's
would have been an interesting week for sure.
I have an 8-year-old that would absolutely love this video.
So cute. My cat likes raspberries.
Well, you see, Josephine, that's what we try to do to actually start the programme off on a properly non-speciesist way. Non-speciesist way. That's the key thing. We'll be finding when we speak to Adrian Tchaikovsky later in terms of his particular viewpoints about anthropomorphic activity in Children of Ruin and indeed Walking to Aldebaran. We've also got some shocking news about Pikachu, Detective Pikachu, one of our correspondents. Didn't necessarily like it. I know, shocking. Still, Eloise, have you been moved by any of these animals? Because I can tell that there's
it's adorable. It reminds me of my cat. My cat likes raspberries.
Oh, does he?
He does.
Many stations might try, but only Siren Radio can actually bring you the notion on the Midweek Drive that Eloise's cat likes raspberries. Was this a kind of acquired taste or just a...
He just likes really strange human food and doesn't like cat food.
I think I can top that. Our cat ate my husband's pizza the other night.
Yeah,
like the whole pizza.
Who ate your pizza?
The cat.
The cat ate Josephine's husband's pizza. Well, you know, these are the kind of messages that will take us into so many wonderful ways. Let's turn to Ben, who I think, you know, you can only take so many funny animal videos in this last Wednesday of May, surely, before you just have to say, enough already. It's just too many good stuff things. Would you like to ask those last two questions to Anna Lewis, please?
Yes, Anna, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link for today on the show?
I certainly have. Thank you very much.
Good. And will you be joining us again next week?
I'd be delighted. Thank you for asking.
I look forward to hearing from you then.
Okay.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist and regular Midweek Drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Whatever you did must have been incredible. Such a big pot, such a well-tied dicky bow. Yeah! Go, buddy, go! Not my words, the words of Will Lorham, but with reference to a particular celebratory, it would seem, William Coles, holding no less the trophy. Is that right, William?
Yeah, certainly holding it. Mm-hmm. I mean, holding it for about a minute. Yes. I happened to... I didn't win it, unfortunately, But what a surprise. I know. It was at in Waterston, this trophy for the Scottish Open. So I grabbed it and made as if it was my own.
Wow. Who would have thought you used to work for Rupert Murdoch's News International? Oh, well, never mind. Heavy political point there, Rupert, if you're listening, don't worry. We'll have you on the show. Probably as wonderful a person as Stephen Amell and Emily Bett Rickards, but there we are. Have you ever heard of them, by the way, William? Emily Bett Rickards or Stephen Amell?
No.
See, that's what I said. Yeah, Eloise. Bottom line. I mean, these folk will keep folk waiting to actually sign their things. As we said, we tried Emily Bett Rickards on the programme last week, and just the name, zero response. So there we are. See, it happens. Anyway, let's move on. In case any of our listeners are thinking of actually getting tattoos of Stephen Amell or Emily Bett Rickards, don't do it. That's all I say. Else use IMDb. What have you been getting up to, William Coles, apart from snatching trophies and making out as though they belong to you?
I have just come back from Holy Island, Lindisfarne.
Oh.
And I've been walking the sands this morning with my youngest son.
Do you know, we were going to meet up with you in Holy Island, I recall, saying that we'd do that in May, and obviously we'd lost that this year, so we're going to have to reschedule that and get it resorted through there. Presumably you managed to avoid the tides. In fact, let's talk to Josephine Westlake, who is our... have you done Lindisfarne? Is that a curious sort of aspect? Was a case of, no, it's not as exciting as the Foss Dyke.
No, I have been to Lindisfarne, been there several times. In fact, my mum actually just got back there today, from there today, so she's been there this weekend as well.
Did she meet up with Bill Coles?
Not as far as I know.
Hmm.
She didn't mention
just
it. Sure
just that interesting, Bill Coles, did you actually meet Josephine Westlake's mother on Holy Island, or was it just a case of just a random... In fact, we do have a very good fudge maker there who is known for her quality Holy Island fudge. And the Bond is actually there. And it's not that big an island, is it?
No, it's pretty small. Well, I was chatting to a lot of people. I may well have spoken to her and said, hello, good morning, how are you? She didn't say Josephine is my daughter, otherwise, you know.
Strange, that.
Strange comment.
Yeah, but I could understand it. Just pride. That's all. She'd have pride in your good self, Josephine, to say, Josephine is my daughter.
Absolutely, she should have pride in that, shouldn't she?
So what was she doing there?
She was actually up there on holiday, so they've been up to Scotland, to the Isle of Seal on the far west coast of Scotland, and they were on their way back down, and they stopped near there for a couple of nights before coming back home to Lincoln.
Very good.
There you are.
It's a nice place. It's a lovely place to go and visit.
Do a random chat. Emily, have you ever managed to get from Northallerton, very exciting town on the journey to Scotland, really, to Holy Island?
I've never been.
Never? Eloise?
Nope.
Ben?
No.
No. And Fergus?
No.
I'm quite disappointed.
Well, that's 2 out of 6, so that's not too bad, really. Only 3 if you include yourself. It's going there, a little secret routine. Who would you like to speak to, William? Because we are now 15 minutes, we're 16 minutes of the show almost, or 14 if you take out the Sky News sort of aspects. And before we head off to singer-songwriter Frankie Swain, it's your chance, Bill Coles, to speak to ace postgraduate student Fergus Jeffs, who is here for his placement, doing all sorts of marvellous things with us. The wonderful Emily Hartley, of course, who's also doing placement with us from the undergraduate perspective at Leeds Trinity and doing all manner of things there. She's even going to do the morning edition as well. What excitement. Eloise Sheehan is with us too. Of course, what's not to love about Eloise Sheehan? She's off to America next week. Is it next week?
I don't know anymore.
Somewhere. Yeah. So doing stuff from there. And you've just heard, of course, her awesome maternal connections there. Josephine Westlake, PhD student, reading geography here at the University of Lincoln with a special focus on...
On flood history.
flood history. Who do you want to go to, Bill Coles?
Emily, please.
I even forgot Ben Lewis there. Sorry, Ben. You know,
that's okay. I'm often forgotten in here as well.
So, just a word retrieve there. Emily, the spotlight, the Coles spotlight, is now on yourself once again. Go, Bill, go.
Emily, dear, I was talking to a young friend of mine. He's 17, and he aspires to a career in politics like his granddad. So what do you think about a career in politics? Is it what young people should be aspiring to?
If that's what interests them, I can't say that I would be particularly aspiring to.
Not at all. Right, OK. Not in any way.
No. No, not at all. It doesn't interest
me. Did you bother to vote at the elections?
I didn't. No.
Any elections?
I have voted, yeah, before. Mm.
Just disillusioned with the whole thing?
Yeah, it's just kind of like I've just given up on it all. Really.
Given up on everything. Yeah. So there we are, one for the Theresa May out of retirement party. Or maybe we should welcome back David Cameron.
I do
He's
like
talking
the Theresa
about.
May memes, though.
That's what she did it for. Yeah. Success on that basis, you know.
She's got a great legacy now, hasn't she?
Phenomenal. That and the Auger Report, what's not to love, really? It's just amazing. It's just genuinely sort of wonderful. Well, there we are, Bill. That was so awesome. I feel you should actually sort of turn it into a screenplay for your next movie. You know, it's just way forward. It's just that particular connection there. I could see meaning emerging from it, just as a matter of course. I've got to throw a quick question at your good self, though, William. Have you ever thought about the intelligence of octopuses?
They're pretty small, aren't they?
Or is
no,
it
it's
octopi?
It's not octopi and it's not octopuses. It's octibidi. I can't remember how you
see,
say
this
that.
Is it.
Now, this is octopodes. Something of QI, isn't it?
Exactly. Let's say mollusks.
Octibides, I think. Octibides or something.
Octibides. We'll find out from
it. It's Greek.
Yeah, we'll certainly find out from Adrian Tchaikovsky because he's written a whole novel in Children of Ruin which actually talks about the hypothetical world in which octopi, or indeed octopodes, or the plural of more than one octopus, effectively have a whole planet and create all sorts of things. So do you think about octopus? We were talking in the early part of the programme about the wonderful notion of mammalian furry animals eating on YouTube, which is great to see and just makes you, have you ever given any thought to your average octopus?
A little bit. I mean, you'd have thought that if they're so smart, the mummies would be telling their kids, if you see a sort of pot lying on the seabed, then whatever you do, don't go into it.
Mm-hmm. You see, for many years, I feel they have had a bit of a rough treatment because for me, the octopus was very much seen as a almost a kraken-like sea monster, as in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, as in the any episode really of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea with Owen Allen, where they actually wanted to have a scary monster, etc. Maybe we've got it wrong. You know, I just raise that out there. I mean, Eloise, has that kept you awake at night at all? Worry about octopus?
And I think about them on a daily basis. Yeah.
Right, so the octopus will return in the programme, worry not, but we have got Frankie Swain, who's a singer-songwriter, who'll be talking about her latest work shortly. Anybody else you want to have a few brief minutes of chat to, William?
Yes, Ben, I'd like to. Civilise Ben. Yeah. Ben, you are obviously plugged into politics. What do you think about the whole Farrago, what's going on at the moment? What is your solution?
Is that a Nigel Farrago?
Yes, you're allowed that one.
Okay, interesting. I don't know. It's very difficult, I think, at this moment in time to sort of grasp, what's really going on. I mean, I've been following it very closely, and I think it's very interesting. The disconnect, perhaps, with mainstream media and the voters, I'd like to say. I think particularly with, doesn't matter which side won or lost the EU elections, but because basically everyone's twisting it to fit their own narrative is what I think is going on. And I think it's interesting that whilst obviously Boris is in court at the minute, it just happens to be whilst there's been a leadership contest on it hasn't happened at all in the last 3 years when there's been plenty of time since.
Are you suggesting the two things
elections
are connected?
I think in some way, yes. I must admit. But to be honest, I really don't know who will be the next Tory leader. I don't really have a favourite. It's more a case of who I don't want it to be. But
okay. Hypothetically, let's say he crossed the House. How would you feel about Jeremy Corbyn being the next Conservative leader?
No, not at all. I think
he might do it.
But there's no faith in his own party with him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So he might just say, I've had enough of you guys.
I think the problem is Labour have got enough problems to deal with at this moment in time behind closed doors, whether that be with Alistair Campbell or anti-Semitism.
Oh, bless him. He just voted Liberal Democrat because he wanted to.
Well, this thing, they've not been particularly clear on their position, I don't think. And
you're out, Alistair. You're out. You're
well, what's your thoughts on it, William?
It's good time to be a journalist.
Mm. Nice. See what we did there? Brought it all the way back. It's a good time to be a journalist. Does that fill your heart with joy, Fergus?
Fills mine with joy and also terrifies me at the same time. Nice. So mix of both.
And that's why, Fergus, I'm going to put you in the spot of asking William Coles those last two questions. I know you can do it. Off you go.
So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, it has been reasonably interesting. Thank you so much.
And would you be willing to join us again in the future?
I would be willing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Very polite. It's nice to see that politeness and journalism still go hand in hand. I thought we'd lost that since the days of Robin Day and so on.
You say she's fun to be with, but there's three words you You don't want to get hurt, I know, and that's why you won't commit. You pretend to be untouchable, but we both know that's a bluff. To keep you on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side of love. To keep you on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side of love. There's a shadow moving through you, a shadow someone cast. I don't know what happened to you in the corners of your past. And just when it seems you're softening, out comes the grand rebuff. It keeps you on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side of love. It keeps you on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side. Crave a love to touch your soul, but you hide your inner fire with impeccable control. Yes, something must have hurt you, something hard and tough that keeps you on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side. It can be slow, it can be brisk. But nothing's gonna happen unless you take a risk. I didn't mean to make a speech, I'm just saying off the cuff. You're on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side. You're on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side of love. You're on the right side of heartbreak and the wrong side of love. You're on the right side of heartbreak, wrong side.
the latest from the Water Boys, of course, who are probably best known for The Hole of the Moon, and that was The Right Side. Okay, moving on. It looked as though we were going to be speaking to Frankie Swain, who, just to confirm, we are on May 29th, and it is 5:25. Actually, it's 5:27 now. No sign, so to speak. So I'm afraid, Frankie, that the entire quintet of quality that's in the studio will be listening and passing judgment on your latest particular number without any notion that you may or may not be there. It's Hook, Line and Sinker. Frankie Swain, an alt-folk singer-songwriter from the southeast of England, and armed with her acoustic guitar, she has a distinctive sound, and paired with her raw emotive voice, she blends the traditional storytelling lyrics of folk with a pop country twist. Emily, are you ready for Frankie Swain?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Ben, are you ready for Frankie Swain?
Yeah, it should be good.
Mm-hmm. Josephine, are you ready for Frankie Swain?
Yeah. Very excited.
The Westlake family, be ready for Frankie Swain?
Yeah, pretty.
Okay. Eloise, will your mother be ready for Frankie Swain?
She's never been more ready.
The enthusiasm.
Exactly. Fergus, are you ready for Frankie Swain?
As ready as I've ever.
Hook, Line and Sinker.
You keep talking, talking, and I keep listening, listening, and every bone in my body knows you got me, you got me. How do, what you do to me? You got me.
Of course you're on to a winner because it's Frankie Swain. How are you, Frankie?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Well, I'll pin my colours to the mast. I've heard that three or four times now, and as well as being dedicated to fishermen and women the world over. I think it's wonderful. Hook, Line, Sinker. We'll find out more about it in a few seconds, but let's open it up to the team. Fergus, what did you make of Frankie Swain's latest Hook, Line and Sinker?
Very good, yeah. It's very enjoyable.
Very good from Fergus. That's good, that's good. Ben, what about yourself?
Yeah, it's quite refreshing, actually. It was really nice. Yeah,
exactly. Emily.
Quite catchy.
Quite catchy, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, compared to last week when we were bemoaning lack of Eurovision success, I mean, Lord above, take a message from Emily Swain, actually. That's what you call a tune. None of this, you know, big thing, bigger than us. Eloise.
It's going straight on my playlist.
Straight on your playlist. So you'll be taking it over to America, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and Josephine Westlake.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Very, very catchy.
It's a winner, Emily. It is a winner. Well done. Congratulations and welcome to the programme. We were a little bit concerned in terms of whether we were just going to leave a message on your voicemail, etc. You started songwriting at 11.
I did, yeah.
So share with us, what have we actually got here from that point of view? Well, I mean, you started singing at 11. Where did that actually sort of evolve from?
Well, it was sort of... You get to sort of age, about 16, when they tell you go and do something with your life and, like, at school. And I don't know, I just kind of decided that music was the only thing that I was sort of good at. It was the only thing that I could see myself doing at that point.
Music and letters of etiquette as well, because, of course, it is Frankie Swain. I think I referred to as Emily, did I not?
Yeah.
Oh, it's all right.
Excuse me, we've got another Emily.
Yeah. Exactly.
Too many Emily. Yeah,
Frankie, all these names, Alex.
Frankie didn't complain. She's all right. It's Frankie Swain. No complaining. It's Swain. Listen, this has already been added to the RTE Radio 1 playlist in Ireland. I mean, I think it's only a matter of time before it goes global from that point of view. Talk to us a bit about Hook, Line and Sinker, Frankie. What is it all about?
I think we've all had that moment when... you're kind of talking to someone and you know that you shouldn't really be going there and you should just leave it alone. That there's something about them that keeps catching you back and breathing you in.
I see what you did there. So there is a fishing analogy, after all, a sort of fishing metaphor in many ways. You know, you've got those little fishies who are desperately sort of swimming along and suddenly, you know, the dangling of bait, the temptation of the flycatchers and so on. And you're like, no, it'll only end in tears, even if you're thrown back in, which, of course, a lot of anglers you should be doing in any case. And don't forget, if you go angling, make sure you've got a rod licence. Ben, any questions you'd like to speak to Frankie about?
Yeah, so Frankie, what was the sort of main inspiration for your career in music, and what made you want to get into singing and songwriting?
Well, my parents have been huge music fans since I was little. I've sort of been listening to everything from, you know, Elton John, Madonna, to the Sex Pistols. They have quite a range that they're listening to. And I don't know, I kind of got to an age where I started to get into my own sort of music that I liked. I was really into McFly when I was little. And I really wanted to play guitar because I thought it was really cool. And so it kind of all stems from there.
Now, certainly your career is just moving from strength to strength because in February 2017, of course, you were working with Steve Rogers, not Captain America, just in case people are confused, but the son of Bad Company's Paul Rogers, of course, on his Intimate Adventures tour. Steve defined you as a true talent. Well said, Steve. And now, of course, you're performing in a whole range of things now. The debut LP is out, Heart of Gold, and you've already done a whole range of things by headlining at Camden's Hall the Arms, and so on and so forth. Where is the journey going to take you next, Frankie? Possibly Lincoln, possibly Teesside. Where would you go?
Well, I hope to travel about with this. Mm-hmm. I hope to travel about with this, but my next big gig is in London, the 100 Club, which is an absolutely amazing venue. It's where a lot of, like, you know, the Rolling Stones, people like that have played.
FrankieSwain.com is obviously the go-to place online to see a whole range of things there. Probably needs a little bit more information on the website, Frankie, if I'm being brutally honest. You know, we've got wonderful music there with Hook, Line and Sinker. That's actually there. We've got contact details and so on. Need a bit more. We need a bit more Frankie. That's what we say. Unless I'm looking through a long side of things there. Emily, any questions for Frankie from yourself?
What do you do first? Like, choose the lyrics before melody or melody before lyrics. How do you write your songs?
Well, with Hook, Line & Sinker, it was an idea that I had. I'd had it for, God, about 2 years. Yeah. And I kind of didn't take it any further until I met with some songwriters and we were kind of sitting there and they were like, well, do we have any ideas? And I sort of pitched that and it kind of collectively got working from there. But I guess it was sort of the lyrics, I guess, come first, and then kind of music and everything else comes after that.
Makes sense. Let's turn to our geographer extraordinaire, Josephine Westlake. Any thoughts for yourself? Will you be adding Frankie Swain, obviously, different character entirely.
You're not coping very well with these names, are you, Alex?
It's the importance of having a script, then. Would you like to ask Frankie any questions from your own point of view?
Yeah, I would, actually. So, obviously, you recommend that we listen to your songs, which makes sense. Is there anybody that you've heard recently, any new singers or bands that you think that we need to listen to that we have might not have done yet?
You weren't expecting that, were you, Frankie? You know, here you are, on to promote your own sort of piece. It was sorted through there, and the first question is, all right, Frankie, we're going to listen to you, that's okay, but who would you recommend who we should listen to? Who would you actually go for?
There's a great singer-songwriter, Toma, his name is, T-H-O-M-A.
Toma.
And he's a friend of mine, we went to university together, and he doesn't actually live too far from me. And he's absolutely great. He's, I think he released an EP last year. It's fantastic, so I definitely recommend him.
See, that just shows, Frankie, just how nice a person you actually are by actually sort of recommending people you went to university with or other people, so just ignore them completely. And your reward is basically, what McFly tune would you like to actually have play you out? Because we've got All About You, Baby's Coming Back, Don't Stop Me Now, Five Colours in Her Hair, Friday Night, I'll Be Okay, Love Is Easy, Obviously. Where do you want to go?
I'm going to go with Obviously, because that was actually the first one that I ever heard, and that's when I kind of fell in love with acoustic music.
And I'm sure that the McFly Boys, or McBustard, or whichever incarnation they actually exist in these days, they will probably be saying, we want to do a cover version of Hook, Line and Sinker. That is available. You should actually go and get it on your playlist immediately. Presumably it's available on all the usual social media systems and iTunes and so on.
Everywhere you'll find music, it will be.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Frankie, even though I got your name wrong and we've got a whole variety of other sort of bits and pieces there? I mean, has it been okay and reasonably interesting for yourself?
Yeah, no, it's been great.
Nice. Actually, Fergus, did you have any questions you wanted to put? Because,
all of mine have probably been asked already.
Really?
So.
Oh, well, that's okay. Yeah. Well, they did. Frankie, will you be kind enough to return with more magical musical moments?
Yeah, definitely. We're planning my next release as we speak, so definitely keep an eye out.
Frankie, you've caught us hook, line and sinker. See what I did there? And of course, it's Tony McDonough's birthday today. So let's say happy birthday, Tony McDonough.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Tony.
There you are, exactly. Well, he looks after PR and publicity. It's time to give him a thank as well from that point of view. A round of applause for Frankie Swain, please.
My time, 'cause she'll never be mine.
Well, it's all about the conceptualisation of what do we mean by good. Or maybe not, as we all approach 70 minutes to 6 o'clock, actually, in Lincoln, England. And over in San Diego, California, I think it's coming around to 60 minutes to 10 o'clock in the morning. Isn't that right? Ace actress extraordinaire. Exactly. It's Annette Andre. Yay! Now, Fergus, have you done any research into the awesomeness that is Annette Andre?
Unfortunately not. No. I was researching.
Yeah, of course, of course. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, Ben, fortunately, he can rescue you, basically. I think it's fair
too
to
much
say.
It knows too much of Annette Andre stuff, I suppose.
I think it's fair to say, Ben, that ultimately you've been very moved by Annette's contributions to the programme in so many ways.
Yes, in more ways than one. And, you know, it's fabulous to have her back on,
Why she has an open invitation and is a regular. And with that are the regular monthly features from Annette Andre, and indeed Arthur Weingarten, the show would just be a little bit less fun. Really.
Very true, very true.
So, yeah. Annette, what delightful things, as we say, with your latest audio epistle from San Diego can we look forward to? Have you actually signed up, for instance, for the crowd-funded Build Your Own Wall that some Trump supporters have been getting on with at this particular stage? Perhaps not.
Oh, no. I've pulled back from watching all that stuff, so I'm a bit behind. And I don't mind being behind. Yeah. I have no idea what that's about.
Perfectly okay. You set the agenda, Annette. It is your time. Set that agenda and take us where you wish.
Okay. Well, we're going hot on the heels of the Blackbird. Talk about con artists. And it's no surprise that Shakespeare hit the nail with the stuff dreams are made on. From Ponzi to Madoff to Trump, all these purveyors of bunk use the Dream Factory to manufacture their flimflams. Wish fulfillment is at the heart of every scam, and in Trump's case, in the more than 10,000 documented lies he's told since taking office, that's been reality on his head. What's put me on this tear is the headline-making antics of another con, a woman who wants you to call her Anna Delvey, but who recently traded that invented moniker for a prison number. The daughter of a truck driver born Anna Vadimoneva Sorokina. She had a 4-year run masquerading as a German heiress with a fictitious 60 million euro trust fund and a voracious appetite to conquer the New York social scene. Employing the Kardashians' mirror-deep narcissism as a playbook, Delvey, aided with a $100,000 line of credit, she sweet-talked out of a major bank using forged financial statements, quickly established herself as a serious player, bilking hotels, airlines, restaurants, clothing boutiques, and a squadron of New York's masters of the universe out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like the celebrity stylist she used to transform her rather frumpy, plain Jane looks into a fashion template, Delvey wove a tapestry of smoke and mirrors to attract investors for a private club scheme that would cost $40 million to be partly financed by a $20 million bank loan she applied for with fake financial documents. After taking her fantasy joyride on New York's dime, the 20-year-old would-be heiress was sentenced to 4 to 12 years in prison. When asked what she looked forward to in the future, she wondered who would be playing her in an upcoming Netflix film. For someone who spent the greater part of life impersonating a wide cast of characters, I'm fascinated by Anna Sorokina's transformation from the apparently quiet, unexceptional person who went almost unnoticed until she surfaced as a jet-set A-lister. Was Anna Delvey always lurking in the shadows while Anna Sorokina's childhood and adolescence passed by without stirring a ripple? And by what quirk of character or genes did she employ her talents for persuading the movers and shakers of society to feed her criminal wants instead of applying the same amount of energy to pursuing her goal honestly? That was the question my husband Arthur and I asked ourselves 20-some years ago when we were taken to the cleaners by a male version of Anna Sorokina. We were attempting to produce a film called The Lion from World's End, based on the stars of Born Free, Bill Travers, and Virginia McKenna's efforts to rescue a young lion sold by Harrods in the 1960s and return him to the wild. Our agent quickly secured his client Michael Caine to star and a prestigious production company to fund half the budget. We began beating the bushes for the other half, and in short order, we were having drinks with Peter Simon, a Swiss financier who said he'd put up the needed funds. A film buff, he said that he'd successfully invested in a handful of films, but in this case, his investment was personal as he, his wife and their three children were devoted animal lovers and supported many animal charities. Both our agent and the lawyers drawing up the contracts confirmed that Peter Simon had indeed invested in the films he said he had, and several banks vetted his financial documents showing his net worth was in the many millions. Within a month, during which we met with Mr. Simon at his exclusive Knightsbridge Hotel and had dinner with him at Michael Caine's Langan's Restaurant, we found him an engaging, witty fellow, very knowledgeable about the production and financial aspects of filmmaking, and always eager to show us the latest photos of his family. As our agent said, Mr. Simon was a mensch. And then the blow fell, delivered by a Scotland Yard detective and an Interpol inspector, who announced that they had arrested Peter Simon, charging him with multiple counts of financial fraud and using a dozen aliases. Wanted in Europe and the US, he'd swindled millions, using the name and forged financial documents belonging to deceased wealthy businessmen. There was no wife, there were no children. All of us involved in the production were devastated. We had taken this man, no taller than a jockey and always with a smile, to our hearts. Over the next year, as we attempted to get the film up and running again, the quandary of why Peter Simon had gamed us came up time and again. The only way he could have profited financially was if the film had been made and released. So why all his time spent on something that he knew was dead on arrival? We never found the answer, unless just playing make-believe was his reward. There is a scene at the end of the film, The Maltese Falcon, that perhaps sums up the reason. A policeman is examining the blackbird and asks the private eye, Sam Spade, "Why all the fuss over a statue?" "It's the stuff dreams are made of," he answered. Who would have thought Sam Spade and William Shakespeare? What a beautiful friendship that would have made. What do you think?
Awesome. Awesome, Annette. That's all I can say. In fact, so awesome, I decided to actually just enclose myself in a cocoon of silence because clearly I could ask the team what you were sharing with us and they would be probably sort of blanked out because there's so much excitement going on in the studio there, which we'll go into at another date. But clearly, actually, from the key points, some of the aspects there about the business of show and how even the best of us, and that includes obviously yourself, Annette, and Arthur, can sometimes actually come up against people who you just think, what? Why? What you, I mean, you know, just, you know, as you said, why did he do it?
That's right. I mean, yeah, I've met another one too, which, you know, less of a story than that, but
that's to come.
That's from another series. Why go into it? All the energy that they spend and all the research they have to do and all what they... How do they do it? And for what? To go to prison.
Are you listening, Boris Johnson? Let's move on. Because obviously we don't know what could happen with that, but it creates a certain hilarity. Ben, have you ever been in the position where you kind of felt that, or ever encountered anybody, no names obviously, where you've been fed a whole passel of fabrications and you just thought, why?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I have no idea. And the thing is, they're so believable, so absolutely believable.
Ben, share with us your experience.
I think most people sort of experience that type of thing, and it always makes you question. But I suppose it comes down to trust at the end of the day. Although I find it quite, if you just go back to generally, honestly, the amount of stories you have are just absolutely fascinating, and you know, the level of detail your writing goes into, it's brilliant. So it's a pleasure to hear it.
Always. By the book as well.
Thank you.
That's worth saying. Let's turn to the wonderful world of science, geography. Of course, scientists never make up things, never fabricate things. Do they, Josephine?
No.
Okay. So, I mean, because clearly the scientific method, as I was brought up in, backstory, chemistry, biology and so on, is very much there. Does it help, or have we got encounters where you actually think, even in geography, people actually sometimes elaborate their activities or explorations, or indeed play with the facts?
I think reputable scientists don't, because if you follow the scientific method, it walks you through really all the things that you're supposed to check and double check. And then obviously when you publish papers, which we all hope to do, then they get peer reviewed. So you actually have your colleagues checking through them with a fine tooth comb, picking up all the mistakes that you've done.
Although it has been said that in an environment which arguably started in the States and has kind of bled over into various other higher educational things of publish or perish, sometimes the pressure to actually get stuff out there sometimes leads to people to say, maybe we cut corners.
I think the temptation might be there sometimes to actually do that. I think that the peer review process does help, because those mistakes or fabrications are usually picked up. But things have happened with us. So, for example, if you think back to the issues with the vaccines and autism, and how that was actually published in The Lancet, the research
and
which linked those two.
And yet wonderful, awesome American scientist, Jenny McCarthy, has turned around and said, don't do it.
Exactly. It's ridiculous as well. And these things kind of snowball. So that research that was done decades ago is still being quoted now as evidence that link vaccines to autism. And obviously in America, it's a huge thing. There's a huge vaccine, anti-vaccine movement. But there's one thing that I do in my spare time, and me and a friend in the department, Holly, also look at this. But it's quite interesting to see on Facebook some of these groups. So you have the anti-vaccine
Flat Earth Society.
I was about to say the Flat Earth Society. If you've never looked at it, it's interesting.
A lot of people, I mean, Annette, I think it's fair to say you've travelled across the Atlantic. Would you turn around and say, yeah, the Flat Earth people are right, actually. The Earth is just flat. It's just an illusion.
That's the normal reaction, I think.
I know. I didn't sleep very well last night. And
I know.
I'm trying to listen to everything on the phone, and I'm getting lost.
Probably worried about the Flat Earth Society. It's okay, you share that with Eloise. She's also sort of having challenges with the whole sort of system. Use cool bed sheets, that's my solution. Or possibly just refrigerate your bed sheets before you actually get into bed. It's just a thought there. Anyway, Annette, it has been fantastic as ever, and I'm going to ask Ben to put those last two questions to you, because I know he's ready and set and willing to go.
I wish I didn't have to, though. I wish
Although, before you do, Annette, I have to ask you, would you prefer the Beatles and Blackbird, or would you like Miles Davis and Bye Bye Blackbird? Which one are you going to go for, Miles Davis or the Beatles?
Yes, Miles Davis.
There we are.
Oh, I'd have gone Beatles myself. But, Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link for today on the show?
Yes, I have, absolutely.
Fabulous.
And I hope you did.
Oh, I'm sure we did. We did, don't worry. And will you join us again in the near future?
Yes, absolutely. If Alex.
Of course. June would not be June without Annette Andre and Arthur Weingold.
We look forward to it, Annette.
The way forward.
Okay.
from the department of, oh, it's a pity we didn't manage to get there, but hopefully they'll come back again because they are so awesome. Getting over to Liverpool earlier this year to actually see the fabulous Fame concert and reunion, etc., is one of our little regrets, really. But the great news is that because he was such a startling success there, such a startling success in the show itself, he's an ace actor, he's just generally all around wonderful. We're delighted to welcome back from the joys of the States, it's Paul Rosenbaum. How are you, Paul?
I'm fantastic, wonderful. How the heck is everything in the UK?
Well, since you left, of course, the Prime Minister has decided she can take no more and has decided to actually resign. She needed you.
My fault. If I knew that, I wouldn't have left.
Exactly. This is the way forward. Who knows where we're heading with various other bits and pieces, but how was Liverpool? Did they greet you and the cast with the welcome that you merit and rightly deserve?
I don't know if I merit it, but you people over there in the UK and Liverpool are crazy. It was unbelievable. They were so enthusiastic, so nice. It was a joy, and we were all on a complete, even though we all had bronchitis at the end, we were all on a high that was unbelievable because the fans were fantastic.
See, that's what we like to hear. And as you know, a mixture of the fans and scenarios, was it your first trek to Liverpool, or had you been there before?
It was my first trip to Liverpool, and I can honestly say I feel like I've never been to Liverpool because we worked from 9:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night when we ate dinner. My wife said she loved Liverpool, though.
That's not easy.
And I am a Beatles fan, so I missed quite a lot, I'm sure.
Well, it worked in so many ways. Now, Eloise, I think it's fair to say that if you were attached to Paul Rosenbaum when you're doing your conventions, various other bits and pieces, you would not have an issue. You would not have somebody like Paul keeping the fans waiting for 4 or 5 hours, then blaming it on the associate staff. And it wouldn't happen, would it?
No, but I can't make a comment.
No, I would never keep anybody waiting.
Exactly.
I've learned not to keep my wife waiting, so I don't keep anybody waiting.
And that, sir, is because you are professional. And we're going to actually open up and introduce you to the whole team. Let's just do a quick routine. Fergus, the series Fame, probably around before you were actually born, but have you followed it through in some of the wonderful ways of Fame and so on?
I know that there's been a number of different incarnations, but definitely.
Only one there's with P.R. Rosenblum. I'm
pretty sure.
The ultimate routine.
One, yeah.
I am the original. I'm old enough to be the original.
Exactly. And we'll hear some of the original stuff in a few moments, but I feel it's time we had another airing of another absolutely ace melody, which, of course, has got a wonderful scenario. It's the Friends of Fame. It's the original studio recording from this perspective. I know Penny was wondering whether we'd run the live thing. I think we'll keep it to studio quality. Would you like to introduce this little number, which is dedicated really to the moon and indeed other natural satellites? You see what I did there, Paul?
Absolutely. So this is by the Friends of Fame and Satellite. You can see the video on YouTube. All of the money we raised from the downloads or the streaming of it is going to Clare House, which is a fantastic children's hospice and also helping street kids here in the United States. So please go see it, the Friends of Fame Satellite, and download it and listen to it, and all that money is going to a good cause, and thank you for playing.
And we'll be with you in about 4 minutes 23 seconds from now.
I look forward to it.
Satellite, home above where eagles dare to fly.
Satellite, you watch as heaven turns the day to night.
I would like to travel in your stratosphere.
Above all the confusion that surrounds us here. Satellite,
satellite, watch flowers grow on graveyards choked by weeds.
Can you see tomorrow? Is there such a word?
Are you all so blind?
Satellite,
Would it make a difference?
Would we realize?
What would we discover? Satellite, you've seen bombs turn mountains into sand. Satellite, how much more destruction can we stand? When there's no one listening, will you still be around? Who will hear the message you are sending?
You've seen bombs turn mountains into sand.
And so
we
it goes.
We have to stop that, don't we?
Well, I would say so. I mean, you know, to be honest.
There's too much bad stuff in the world right now. We need to make this a better, happier place. Yeah. Life is easy. Respect everybody.
Which I think is a message we'd like to share from the University of Lincoln, Siren Radio, Southside Broadcasting, and the whole thing. Let's turn to our geographer, Josephine Westlake. Again, you could actually have some instant geo-carnage from that point of view. Any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Paul Rosenbaum?
Not really.
Did you ever see the series Fame?
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
I was actually trying to avoid eye contact there because I actually have never, ever in my life seen Fame.
What a joy that you can
That's
have to look forward
because
to.
Because I have never, ever in my life seen you, so we're
exactly.
Oh, that sounds fair.
That makes perfect sense. Sometimes, Paul, I feel, you know, the PhD students of our world.
I'm so sorry.
It's just not there from that point of view.
But you know what? Thank God for the PhD students. That's all I can say.
Exactly. Let's turn to Fergus. Fergus, any thoughts or questions from yourself? I think it's just the science.
No. I mean, with Fame, it's like how do you look back on the whole experience of?
I'm sure there's a question there, Paul. I'm sure it'll come out from that point.
How did you find the experience of being on the show when you were doing it?
You know, it's interesting. When we did it, it was a job, but it turns out that 37 years later, I found out what the show meant to everybody. And how if you lived in a small town, it was okay to be gay by looking at the show, okay to be yourself, okay to want something different than everybody else. So 37 years later, I'm humbled by the experience having done it and appreciate it so much more by the way it affected people that I had no idea about.
And it also paved the way, obviously, for shows like the Glee Club, or Glee in general, the sign of things from that point of view.
Or as we like to call it, The Imposter.
I see what you did there, exactly, and I would agree with you. But there we are, even though they did various sort of cover versions of all manner of other bits and pieces, but
no,
still.
They did a great show.
Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I find it quite interesting, Paul. Sort of your career in general, what made you sort of go to Fame? Was there a particular process?
Because you wanted to live forever, obviously.
Yeah. But was there a particular process you had to go through to get into the role?
You know what, I was a child actor and I auditioned for it. It was, when you're an actor, you just go for the next job, whatever it is, And that happened to be the next job, and I was lucky enough to get the role. So, and there you go. You know, that's the life of an actor.
Do you think there's an element of skill, though, as well as luck?
You know what? There's an element of luck, but if you don't have the chops, you're not going to be around long. But if you have the chops and you have the luck, you're going to have a great career. But you cannot have one without the other. I know so many talented actors who can't rub two nickels together, but they're so talented because they haven't had the lucky break. So it takes a lot.
Gotta keep going.
You have to be a real masochist to be in this business, basically.
I mean, we'd love to actually talk about Falcone. Is it Falcone or Falcone? Are we talking about a
Falcone?
Falcone. It's just Falcone, a TV series in which
Falcone, which was based on the movie Donnie Brasco. Mm. They just changed the name, and I played an FBI agent on that, and that was also a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, we'll work through that. But of course, in case people are wondering, we are talking to the Montgomery McNeil. Yes, the Montgomery McNeil in Fame, the TV series. And are there plans for a return to the United Kingdom? I mean, obviously, Liverpool benefited this year from the awesome reunion of the cast. Or is it just a case of we're moving on. Next stop, Moscow.
Well, you know, there are talks to come back and do some other places in Europe. We're just trying to figure it out. It was so much fun. Everybody is on such a natural high as opposed to back then. Mm. And it's just, we're hoping to get back there sooner rather than later. Yes.
Oh, we hope so. Let's turn to Emily. Emily, any thoughts or questions for yourself? Again, you probably weren't familiar with the TV series. Maybe your parents were.
Apart from, you have persuaded me that I might want to visit Liverpool.
Well, I suppose that's a minor success. Yeah. You've persuaded Emily she might want to visit Liverpool. I don't know. Kudos from that point of view. Paul, it has been absolutely fantastic. There's so much more we actually need to speak about, but time as ever sort of is our sort of main challenging system from that point of view. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
No, this has been horrible, probably one of the worst experiences of my life.
You know,
we often get that feedback.
Yeah, Eloise, yourself, I don't know. Sometimes we're shedding blood here, guys. I mean, I could use the classic line about the pronunciation.
You guys are fantastic and always a pleasure to talk to you, Alex.
Well, it has been wonderful, as we knew it would be. So can we look forward to your good self connecting with us again in the very near future? Will you come back and join us again?
Always my pleasure. And I thank you so much for all of your help, the Friends of Fame, Satellite, Good Cause, Download It, Visit It. Thank you so much, Alex.
I think a round of applause for Paul Rosenbaum and the Friends of Fame and more.
You all take care.
Asleep amid the flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day. Asleep amid the flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day. I'm
really monsters. They're just cephalopods. Or spiders. Or maybe human beings. What say you, Adrian Tchaikovsky, Arthur C. Clarke award-winning writer and general all-round wonderful person? How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Hello there. How are we doing?
Well, we're delighted to speak with your good self. Because, just quoting from Starburst magazine before I actually go into my own views with respect to the fantastic Children of Ruin, conjures up a sweeping narrative. 4.5 stars. I'd go further. I'd give it 5 stars. I thought it was absolutely awesome. And just when you thought Children of Time had kind of done it all when it came to actually looking at species and evolution and suggestions about working together, suddenly you roll this out. And I haven't even spoken about the bacteria, spoiler alert, but they do get into all sorts of other scenarios, etc. Children of Ruin, I think, deserves a hearty round of applause across the globe. And if you haven't read it, you should do so now. Go out and get a copy. In fact, stop what you're doing and actually go and get a copy now whilst you're listening to the interview as well. And I'm going to get started on Walking Tall, Deborah. And it was fantastic, Adrian. And I say that as just generally, when are the movie rights going to be actually out there? Because this has got to be made. Children of Time set one bar, but you've gone and raised it again.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Moving on. In the studio, we have a couple of folk whom you've met before, a couple of folk whom you haven't. If you recall that fantastic sci-fi weekend that we were at a wee while ago, there you will have encountered Ben Lewis.
Hi, Adrian.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Something we were just sort of mooting, we were just sharing sort of this. I seem to think, having spoken to your father, that Tchaikovsky, you are related to Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky, the composer, back in the whole sort of connectivity. Or was I completely wrong there?
I think it's almost certainly not the case, but theoretically you might be related to his grandfather.
Yeah, see, theoretically.
Because his grandfather would have spelt the name the same way that we actually do, rather than his spelling of the name that I borrowed for the books. Huh. It's all very tangled.
Well, yeah, it's what we appreciate it, all sorts of things, etc. I mean, I'd be so tempted. I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but at the end of the day, I thought the notion of the mollusks and those creative mollusks that we actually got there. Why the octopus? Because I know you actually used a lot of scientists to actually sort of feed into your research in terms of this. And the way in which you personify the sort of lines, etc. And, of course, for those people who like the spiders and Children of Time, they're still in there as well, which is great.
Oh, yes.
So why that particular philosophy? And talk to us a little bit about Children of Ruin.
Okay, I mean, it's difficult to talk about Children of Ruin without spoiling Children of Time.
Yeah.
For people who haven't read it. But as Children of Time deals with, I think I can say, a sort of a highly evolved spider civilization that people encounter. We then have people, and for that matter, spiders, encountering a very, very different octopus civilization, which I basically worked up from how octopus cognition is believed to work. And I almost broke my own brain getting to grips with it, because octopi are very, very weird, and they have a kind of a mind that's distributed across all of their legs, and it works in very peculiar ways. And I had a lot of fun, but it was incredibly difficult to work it out in a way that I could then bring to the readership in any kind of comprehensible state.
Well, you need not have worried, Adrian, because you've succeeded. I mean, just this little sequence from midway through the whole thing. Paul is fiercely unhappy. Confinement is seldom a positive thing, but his species was never content to live in a cage, even back when they were just semi-sentient mollusks and the pets of one Dizrasenkovi. To keep an octopus was all too often a constant battle of the captor's technology against the captive's ingenuity. That love of freedom, the knowledge perhaps that if danger looms, there is always a way out, runs deep in the species. As a captive, of his own kind no less, Paul cycles through feelings of despair, anger, misery, confusion, and bitter betrayal, or at least emotions akin to such human feelings. And it's that kind of area that really opens up the question of how much do we really understand about our fellow citizens on the planet Earth, fellow human beings, it might say, as well as obviously the animals we share with us as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, and one of the reasons I chose octopi, and the reason I chose the jumping spiders from the previous book, is there's a huge amount of potential there. You can kind of see there is definitely an intelligence going on, even in the native state.
So if they've had a chance to evolve and become the dominant species on the planet, you know, the whole books are really an excuse to run that thought experiment.
Now, our PhD student for geography, who earlier in the programme had a little bit of controversy, I think it's fair to say, in terms of the plural of octopi, octopuses. I mean, would you like to just share...
See, I think it's octopodes.
Octopodes.
Greek.
My understanding, and I appreciate I am actually going against Stephen Fry in QI in this, is that whilst that is the Greek, that's not the proper plural for octopus, which is just octopuses, which is horribly sort of unlyrical as a word. So what I did kind of, to square the circle, I've managed to use octopi, octopodes, and octopuses all in the same book in different contexts.
He has, you know. Right. He has, yes.
Just throw people's OCD into overdrive.
I tell you, I suppose three nights to actually work through it, but it was awesome. I mean, I've kind of eased back in terms of Aldebaran, which is slightly smaller, a novella, of course, Walking to Aldebaran, and we want to talk more about that as well from that perspective. But again, just returning to the review, it's interesting that the line is taken by, indeed, a certain Jonathan Wright, that for all that science fiction and fantasy are closely related fields, the odd eyebrow was raised by Adrian Tchaikovsky. Taking the 2016 Clark Award for Children of Time, Tchaikovsky was, after all, a fantasy writer, having an away day from his regular gig, better known as the author of fantasy sequence Shadows of the Apt. You're just a good writer, Adrian, surely. That's the whole thing. Doesn't matter about the genre. You're just a good writer, storyteller, narrative.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. It seems to have worked out that way. I mean, I remember it feeling like it was a bit of a leap at the time, because yes, it was, you know, not just fantasy, but sort of, you know, the full-on epic fantasy, empires and swords and things like that. Mm. So,
I was personally pleased to see Averana Kern, the female AI who's kind of been through all sorts of scientific experiences, was still back and in full force, I thought, actually, in terms of the whole thing. It was nice to see that was there. But also a little interesting about science philosopher Peter Godfrey Smith's Other Minds, which deals with cephalopod or cephalopod intelligence, was a major influence. I mean, you did your research, certainly, in terms of intelligence and ways that other species actually operate.
Yes, and I mean... Godfrey Smith's book was absolutely invaluable in that, and anyone who's read the book will be able to see its fingerprint over a lot of the octopus sequences, because I very much let him guide me as to how octopus minds currently are believed to work. Okay. But yes, I don't know what I'd have done without it, to be honest.
Well, you see, it shows good research pays dividends. Ben, any thoughts, questions for yourself?
Yeah, obviously, we met you recently at the...
so do Eloise. I haven't introduced Eloise as well.
I know.
Yeah,
she
thank
was,
you. You forgot about me.
No, we
completely forgot about Eloise.
We were just saving the best to last, Eloise. Don't worry. It's all sorted through.
Obviously, we met and spoke at the Sci-Fi Weekender. Mm-hmm. Events have you got coming up that we could perhaps look forward to seeing you at?
I think you'd buy the books.
Well, in 2 weeks' time, I'm at a new convention that's kicking off in Edinburgh called Chimera. So I don't know what that's going to be like, but I have high hopes, because it would be nice to get another large-ish regular convention going in the year.
I think so. And Chimera, surely it'll be half Scottish, half English. two genetic species joined together. You'll have a kilt with roast beef, and who knows what could happen?
A lot of whiskey.
Yeah. It's just my thought.
And then later in the year, Worldcon, which tends to travel the globe and spend a lot of the time in the States, is actually coming to Dublin. Mm. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Well worth accessing. Fabulous. I haven't been to Worldcon for a few years myself, actually. It's back in London. So that, of course, I would heartily endorse any Adrian Tchaikovsky novel. But you keep raising... I've got to say, Children of Ruin, for me, Adrian, it has replaced Dogs of War. I thought it was impossible, but it has, for me, Children of Ruin, it has actually replaced... There's so many sort of deep-lying things that we can actually work into, and I would certainly heartily recommend it, if you just want to find out about the human condition. Emily, any thoughts from yourself? No. Emily's she's having thoughts, but she's kind of coming different colours of the rainbow, around like an octopus and all sorts of ways. Very strange. And there is a tune coming up, which obviously I think would be ideal for the movie soundtrack, which is fairly obvious, admittedly. What about yourself, Fergus?
So, why the focus on the kind of eight-legged creatures of planet Earth, like the spiders and the octopus.
I think the whole eight-legged thing is entirely serendipitous, but it did let me in that I could keep up my eight sections to a book thing, which is something that turned up in Children of Time and which is purely there to please my own sense of symmetry. But yeah. I don't know, because I mean, I'm putting together the thoughts for a third book in the series, and I'm kind of running out of obvious eight-legged candidates, so I may have to break the theme for that one.
Wow. Unless, of course, you look at bacteria and see the way they could actually just evolve and pseudopodia could work through. You could have a meebe that could do that. Just a thought. It could open up a whole range of things. It's all about communication. Eloise, any thoughts from yourself?
No.
See, it's mind-blowing in so many ways. Let's turn to Emily. I'm sure you can do this. Last two questions for Adrian Tchaikovsky, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link today?
Adrian?
I'm not entirely sure. Oh, do we mean this?
Yes, this very moment.
Have you enjoyed the conversation?
Exactly. That's right. You see, this is what the translators felt. This is, you can understand Helena, one of the key heroines of Children of Time now, where she kind of sort of knows what the octopus is trying to say. Doesn't have a clue. And then there's a spider who's trying to sort of tap on the floor and sort of say, this is what it's all about from that point of view. And again, you're getting a sort of sign of the whole thing. Was it reasonably satisfying for you, Adrian?
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
That's okay then. So that's sort of that. Will you come back again?
Yes, absolutely.
Hurrah!
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see. In an octopus's garden in the shade, we would be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing an octopus's garden in the shade. About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me, no one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
See, correct use of the apostrophe, Octopodes garden. It doesn't really rhyme at all. Sorry. Yes, however, let's move on. A delight, working both as an edgy parody of detective noir and a heartfelt family-friendly comedy built around the inherent absurdity of Pokemon. 4 stars out of 5. Stephen Kelly in SFX magazine endorsed that from Starburst magazine. And it's a magazine that tells it as it is, James Perkins. It's funny, charming and endearing. Pokemon Detective Pikachu is an absolute delight from start to finish for new and old fans alike. Easily the best video game movie ever. Expected 7 stars, actual 8 stars, although I was the only person in the cinema when I saw Pokemon Detective Pikachu, I'd endorse that. How shocked was I then to find Robin Pierce? Effectively, I mean, Robin, it's your first ever podcast, officially piercing the veil. And what do you do? I mean, you know, not only do you not give your son a microphone, or he's kept to one side so he sounds like he's in a different room, goodness sake, you then actually go and diss Ryan Reynolds in Pikachu. Robin, have you lost it? Is it just you're watching too much Lost in Space? What's going on?
Oh, I went to see the film. I mean, Steve's always been the Pikachu fan, Pokemon. He tells me that we went to see the animated film when he was a child. I've successfully blanked that out of my memory. But he's usually right about these things. And we went to see Detective Pikachu with daughter Tiffany in tow as well. Tiffany fell asleep 3 times. Was actually snoring at one point.
Yeah, she hasn't
sat up herself awake.
Look,
and nudged me and said, "The bloke next to me is snoring." Steve was a bit disappointed, and I couldn't find anything.
Well,
anything
personally, I would just take the words of your Starburst reviewer James Perkins and say, just go for it. You know, he's clearly on the case there. In the same edition, the world's longest-running magazine of culture, I noticed that you then actually can turn around and say, without any sort of irony at all, that you're giving the deadly mantis, who would have believed that millions of years ago giant insects roamed the earth, you know, a full sort of thumbs up. You know, and let's not get started on your views with respect to Quetzalcoatl.
Absolutely. Cue the winged serpent. now that's where it's at.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I suspect Cue the winged serpent, actually, although I didn't ask it with Paul, possibly inspires the kids from Fame. But maybe let's not go there. Robin, you've been listening to the show, and of course you've got your own podcast now, so we're cross-promoting that. Notice I cross-promote other podcasts. Does he mention a single edition of the Midweek Drive? He doesn't even mention the Stone Tapes. Robin?
I will rectify that when we record the next one.
We've tagged you into photographs. You've had the Quintet of Quality who've been having such fun, or not, as the case may be. I don't know. Some people like Frankie Swain. Some people like Fame. Some people don't. Horses, water, etc. Some people do their research. Some. What were your comments, sir? Who would you like to go to? Now's the chance before we go to Phil Dearness, who might also be listening to the show.
Let me do a quick overview of the show. You were talking earlier about funny eating animals with Anna Lewis, and I believe I can beat even... Now, was it Josephine who said about a cat with an odd appetite?
I think we both have them, don't we?
In my younger days, I had a cat named Rambo who had an appetite for baked beans, apples and crisps.
Nice.
Not at the same time.
Oh. Did you wear a headband and actually be prone to have flashbacks to the Vietnamese era?
He was actually the biggest wuss of a cat I've ever seen.
So exactly like the movie. Sorry, Sly.
I loved the Frankie Swain song, Hook, Line and Sinker. Absolutely loved it. Going on to Annette Andre, I loved the story about the German heiress, and it reminded me of something that Hitchcock would have filmed. How strange and a sign of the times, Alex, that the lady in question wondered who would play her on Netflix. You know, anybody would think, oh, who's going to play me in a big Hollywood? Now it's Netflix.
See, this Josephine means that whilst you were having such hilarity and not listening to Annette Andre earlier in the show, you can now download the podcast and say, that's what it was all about. You know, sometimes we shed blood, honestly. Carry on, Robin.
Shedding blood. We talked about the Flat Earth Society earlier on. And these people, they just make me laugh. Because, you know, basically we have photos of other planets from NASA, and these other planets are in all their spherical glory. Yet these people believe that we on Earth are spinning through the cosmos like a giant frisbee.
Well, Terry Pratchett did, to be fair.
They actually don't. They actually think that we're not moving. So they think we're actually sat on a disc. not moving.
Thank goodness for these magnetic shoes, eh?
Exactly. Well, they've got all sorts of interesting ideas, like gravity doesn't exist. It's all caused by electromagnetic forces. They've got all sorts of weird ideas, obviously, about the dome. They tend to think that around the outside of this Earth disk is a huge wall of ice. And if you try and go across Antarctica, obviously NASA, who are in on this whole conspiracy and doctoring all these videos and photos you were talking about, they're all made up completely, apparently. They will shoot you if you try and cross Antarctica. So.
Oh, goodness.
Bear that in mind.
The same people I suspect who would vote for Donald Trump.
Don't say it. You have. Oh, no.
I went there to be edited in post. Paul Rosenbaum. I remember him from Fame back in the day. You know, that was Thursdays after Top of the Pops.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And that satellite song is warbling away in my head. And I thought we were doing so well against these earworms. But I have to say, you know, the sentiments behind the lyrics are ones that I'm behind absolutely all the way. So earworm away, kids from Fame or friends from Fame. I've never met Adrian Tchaikovsky, but I suspect our paths will cross at a sci-fi event sooner or later. Interested in this book about the cephalopods. Now, that's where the octopuses, octopi, whatever, fit in from earlier on in the
mollusk mystery. The mollusk mystery, as we said.
And the octopodides.
Octopodes.
I thought it went the same way as cactus and cacti, or are they cactides?
I think this is the difference between Greek and Latin.
Botany and zoology. Zoology and botany.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Plus, of course, the fact that I'm flagrantly playing with you guys.
And we wouldn't have it any other way, or nor would Eloise. It's going to be Eloise's last Wednesday show, unless, of course, she connects via telephone. She might want to disown us when she's in the States.
I'm going to ask, actually, to speak to Eloise, who I saw in a photograph was hiding her face earlier on.
Pikachu! Peekaboo! She thought I couldn't see her.
Yay. Yeah, I was trying to pretend I wasn't here. So
you're going to America?
I am. I'm going to Maine.
Where are you going?
To Maine.
Oh, lovely part of the country. Stephen King country, my favourite author.
Yeah.
Lots of lobsters.
Lots
of lobsters there, isn't there?
Yes. Yes. Yes, and the Boston Red Sox, it's baseball season.
It's just a wonderment that you're heading for, and we look forward to regular filed reports, Eloise.
Good luck on your trip, and please, post photographs.
Thank you.
It's going to be at its best this time of the year, I would imagine, other than, you know, the fall, of course.
Of course.
Good luck.
Robin, that has taken us around to Emily asking you those last two questions. Hopefully she'll do a better job than she did with Adrian Tchaikovsky. I'm only saying...
Ouch!
Thanks.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link today?
Oh, I've loved it.
And will you be... You've made me go
for the benefit of any Lambda or RADA people listening, era, that's what you Emily, call pregnant pauses.
We've got to the stage now where I'm going to come back whether you want me to or not.
He will return.
He will
come back, exactly.
Yes.
He's
at the end of every Fu Manchu film, the world has not heard the last of me.
Although in these politically more focused days, the likelihood of Sax Roma ever getting that past the militant group, unlikely, I'd have to say, unlikely.
Oh, good grief, I had to buy that box set before it disappeared forever, yeah, I think.
Absolutely.
In my mind, there's a face on my lips, there's a name in my life, there's no place for the man that I love, 'cause I'm living my life just to sing and be free. From LA to New York, from New York to LA. Ooh, from New York to LA. Ooh, 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 ooh. From New York to LA. From New York to LA. From New York to LA. Ooh, I'm a star in New York. I'm a star in LA. In my life, there's no place for the
Oh, what the hey, I've just gone tag crazy and tagged Robin Pierce and Phil Linus into the team for this evening's Midweek Drive. Indeed, the last Midweek Drive of May 2019, because we've got the Midweek Drive Morning Edition tomorrow morning. Hello, Phil Linus. How are you?
If I get any better, I'm going to worry about it, Alex.
Yeah, well, there we are. In terms of ancient jokes that we never thought we'd actually use, because you thought, really? Was that the case? George R. R. Martin, because that's the way you pronounce it. George R. R. Mountain Martin, because of the surprises that you get in Game of Thrones. I'll leave that for Robin. R. 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 Martin. Phil. Where would you like to go? Have you heard any of the show? Have you heard any of the program? Or is it a case of we're literally flying out of control, blind as a bat, etc., and other such visually impaired Star Trek-type metaphors?
I am blind as a bat and out of control.
Yeah.
But I'm bunkered down editing, trying to edit together a Breakfast Club podcast, because it's been 2 months since I've done one, and I feel I owe it to these people. But boy, it's slow going. Editing audio when you can't see what you're doing is difficult. I mean, it ends up being like an episode of the Midweek Drive. I mean, it's organized chaos is what it is.
So kind of post-modern then, kind of like a triple whammy of stuff, yeah? Taking that post to cubed levels. So where would you like to go? Would you like to speak to our ace geographer, Josephine Westlake? And, of course, Mark, Josephine, time for shout-outs. Time for shout-outs to your family, to your fellow PhD students who might be joining us. You can see when we thought, just yourself for the first show. You can bring others back for others from that point of view. It's too much excitement. Who would you like to say hi to?
I thought I was getting to talk. I'm sorry. Well, because I would love to hear from the geographer. I would love to hear a geographer's take on what were the peaks and the valleys of map out for me, if you will, the peaks and the valleys of today's program.
The peaks and the valleys of today's program. Well, there were animals at the start, weren't there?
Yeah,
Ben
got
cute
out
animals.
Of control.
Cute
Eloise
animals.
Was obviously on something. I haven't known he's watched all of that. And as far as Fergus was concerned, well, Fergus, what goes on in the studio just has to stay in the studio. I shall say no more. Emily was a bit shocked, but never mind. She is from Northallerton. Anyway, whilst you're doing that, quickly give a few shout-outs to people.
I have to do some shout-outs to my other PhD students, obviously in geography, because we're quite a new school, so it's quite exciting. So Trudy and Holly are the ones that keep me company every day. And then there's Amog, who's in our office as well, who is a postdoc. So he's doing a lot of research with geography as well. He's currently in India, so he's gone off to India. My supervisor, obviously, Professor Mark Macklin, he's currently on the Zambezi River, so he's having a wonderful time.
Is he humming the tune?
There's a tune.
Zambezi, you must have come across that. I'll look it up for you.
No, I don't
think anyone has, Alex, it's just you.
And then obviously there's my family as well, so my little kids. So I've got Annalise and Brendan, who are adorable.
Well, there we are, Phil. You've enabled and facilitated Josephine Westlake to actually talk through Trudy, Holly, Amok, and more, including her family. It's just, remember, the University of Lincoln, wherever you're from, you're home. Home of Siren Radio. It's over to you, Phil, now. I shan't say a word, if I can.
What am I supposed to say? Other than, of course, having been to Lincoln, I was shocked to learn that it, like New Zealand, appears on no maps. But then, once I drove with Alex, I realized that Lincoln is not a geographical destination. It's simply a place of mind.
Yeah, very true. Other folk in the studio who, and I'm presuming you haven't heard the show at this moment, Phil, or have you? I mean, are you just teasing us in the way that you're prone to do in the sort of Chilpack Hollywood-esque way?
I heard the part where a geographer gave shout-outs the people on the Zambezi River.
Yeah, that's okay. So we have Ben Lewis, of course, with us. We have Fergus Jeffs. Eloise Sheehan, as we said, her last Midweek Drive until she comes back as a medieval historian. It's what happens when you go to Maine. You go out there as a film studies graduate, you come back a medieval historian. Strange. Emily.
Really? You don't come back a modern historian of medieval times? That seems strange.
I know, but it's the way things are. It's called time. It's just an illusion, as you know. As Einstein once said, the only certainty is that past, present and future is just an illusion.
But what did he know? he loved cats, so that I know is a good thing. Hey, Ben Lewis is there. You know, speaking of geography, Ben Lewis is my northern star. He is always there.
You're my southern star, Phil.
I can always point the compass of my programming day onto Ben Lewis and know that I'll end up where I'm meant to be.
Fabulous. Well, I feel privileged.
Which makes every kind of sense possible. You'll be pleased to know that we gave Fuzz Aldrin a shout-out as well, to use the vernacular, with David Seaman, former England and Manchester City goalkeeper. I think he played for a few other teams as well, but David is currently involved in the judging of the Cat of the Year awards that, of course...
How did he end up doing that?
Because he likes cats.
Is that it?
That's
all the qualifications he needed.
Yeah, he likes cats. That's all we actually do.
So I heard this joke today, and I'll share it with you, and it's apropos because I got no sleep thanks to Fuzz Aldrin last night. Mm-hmm. So a German Shepherd and a Doberman and a cat all die and go to heaven. And when they get to heaven, God asks the German Shepherd, "What do you believe?" And the German Shepherd says, "I believe in complete discipline and obeying my master's commands." And so God says, "Very good, you may sit at my right side." And then God asks the Doberman, "What do you believe?" And the Doberman says, "I believe in vigilance and giving my complete loyalty to my master." And God says, "Great, you can sit on my left side." And then God looks at the cat and says, "What do you believe?" And the cat says, "I believe you're sitting in my chair."
Sorted. That's the message. That's what we need to actually listen to and indeed focus on. I don't think there's time to actually squeeze in the David Seaman interview, but Emily, would you like to throw a few questions at Phil Leonis about life, the universe, or share with him how you found the sixth hour of the midweek drive that you've now actually suddenly managed to clock up in your work placement from Leeds Trinity University?
Yeah, I've definitely enjoyed it. It's been good. Yeah.
Well,
we've been talking about a range of topics.
Yeah, a range of topics. I'll tell you what, let's squeeze in this David Seaman piece. Phil, stay with us. We'll be back with you in about 4 minutes from now. Certain must covers when it comes to Siren Radio and South Hour Broadcasting, and certainly the National Cat Awards has become an unmissable event, which is just sheer perfection. I know, I couldn't resist it. Anyway, to talk about the UK's next Cat of the Year, two fabulous individuals. In many ways, they are the legendary, awesome companion team that are David Seaman, ace England football legend, of course. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
And equally legendary professional dance skater and dancing on ice solo extraordinaire, Frankie Seaman. How are you, Frankie?
Good morning, Alex.
Excellent.
Thank you for the amazing introduction.
Oh, it's the way forward, basically. It's critical stuff, this. Now, David, I know that goalkeepers over the years have been referred to as the cat and so on and so forth, but isn't this just taking it a wee bit too far in terms of actually getting involved with cats yourself?
No, I've always been a cat person. You know, I've had dogs as well, but just always had a liking for cats as well. You know, so you know, this is great for us, or perfect, as you just said. You know, that we're actually been that we're judging this this category, and I've been looking at clips and videos and things, and I'm getting right into it.
Well, this is the whole point, because I mean, the grand ceremony, of course, at the Savoy Hotel is phenomenal, but some of the stories that you actually get, I mean, Frankie, I suspect you might have been moved to tears by some of these.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very emotional day, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read through some of the categories, but we are, in fact, judging the Outstanding Rescue Cat Award, which is really pertinent to us because we have two rescue cats ourselves, and I actually foster cats and kittens for the Cats Protection. So, of course, it's an emotional day, and it's lovely to hear all of these heartwarming stories as well as some of the really sad ones. But it's just a great celebration of cats on the day.
Well, certainly the rescue cat, we always refer to our weekly Los Angeles correspondent film director Phil Leonis, who together with Lily Leonis also have a rescue cat called Fuzz Aldrin. Yes,
hello, Fuzz.
Yeah, exactly. He's purring across the Atlantic, I can tell. I was particularly taken by Truffles in this particular category, though. Raised the alarm when her owner suffered an epileptic seizure.
Yeah, we do see lots of cats that actually have been able to detect illness and even cancers, or raise the alarm when the house has, when we've had house fires. So we've seen quite a few amazing feats of bravery and intuition from cats. It's quite astounding when you read the stories. And of course, unlike dogs, you don't always get to hear these things because, you know, dogs are out there, they're in the parks, people are chatting about their dogs on more of a social basis, whereas cats obviously always sort of stay at home. And so these stories stay within families, and it's nice for us to be able to highlight some of them publicly.
David, from your own perspective in terms of the stories, were there any that spring to your mind? I mean, Sparky, of course, was an interesting one, helped her owner cope after she was blinded in one eye during a random attack from that point of view. But I mean, they have become very much our companions, have they not?
Yeah, they are, you know, and a lot of the stories are brilliant, but I can't let you know which my favourite is.
Of course not, exactly.
We're judging. All will be revealed.
Precisely. Oh, you shouldn't have asked from that point of view. But, I mean, just talk about your time, because, I mean, you know, clearly you became a triple legend from my own point of view when you actually signed for Manchester City, because, I mean, you can take the other clubs, but, you know, basically City till we die, as we know, so from that point of view. Were there any sort of areas there where you sort of thought that, I mean, football supporting cats? Because I've seen cats watch football on television and been quite taken with it.
Yeah, well, our cats, we've got two rescue cats at home, that's Smokey and Willow, and Willow's often up at the TV, like, trying to chase the ball, actually, on when I've got football on, which is quite regular.
She makes a better goalkeeper than some of the ones I've seen on the telly.
Yeah. Let's not talk about the playoff finals over the weekend and pass back to the goalkeeper. Yeah, it all ended up okay.
Yeah, I did see the couple of mistakes there, and yeah, I did feel for the goalkeepers, but that's the life of a goalkeeper. You know, most of the time you can be the hero, but a lot of the time you're the villain as well.
And that's pretty much the philosophical statement we'd like to actually sort of leave you with today in many ways. Most of the time you can be the hero, but a lot of times, Phil, you can be the villain as well. It's almost like a Mike Dooley-esque moment there. How are you, Phil? Did you catch the little mention we gave you there with, of course, England goalkeeper and indeed his wonderful wife and dancing on ice specialist Frankie Seaman?
Yeah, that was very exciting. I think Fuzz even reacted to that.
Yeah, you see.
It is amazing. There was a fairly famous news story here in the States about a cat at a retirement home who could intuit what resident in that home was going to be the next to die. And the cat would befriend that person and stay by their side every moment of the day to ease their transition.
Or possibly, these people had a cat allergy and it helped them on their way. Who knows?
Well, that cat became the inspiration for Stephen King's sequel to The Shining. Mm. He said, what would Danny be doing with his power as a grown man suffering from alcoholism? He would be that cat.
Exactly.
Interesting.
That just shows the magical thing. As I said in the pre-live piece chat, as I refer to the, are you online? Are you all set, ready to go? Have a listen to this. It's a bit of behind-the-scene activities that go on with respect to live radio. Chill Pack Hollywood Hour number 627 is online now, with coming soon lots of great materials in terms of things you can buy. There's a shop on chillpackhollywood.com. There's even discussion about Forrest Whitaker. I'll just try it in the studio. I suspect it'll be a zero response, but let's try. Fergus, have you ever heard of Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah, I'm a fan of his work. I mean, Last King of Scotland especially. Yeah, when he played Idi Amin.
Absolutely. Well said. I was thinking, of course, of Forrest Ackerman. But let's Forrest Ackerman as opposed to Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
I knew where you were going there, Phil. Don't worry. I'm in control. I've got this one. Forrest Ackerman.
Not that Forrest.
Not that Forrest. Ben Lewis, Forrest Ackerman.
No.
No. Emily.
No.
No.
No idea.
No famous monsters of film land for you, then. And, Forrest Whitaker, But easily confused. In fact, I'm amazed that you didn't actually use the Forrest Whitaker line to actually talk about that. Or maybe he hasn't got a square in Hollywood named after him, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, were you shocked that Dean didn't know who this was?
Shocked. I almost fell off my marking chair at the time. There was I trying to slug my way through another sort of essay, etc. Like, seriously? Dean? Crazy?
He's shouldn't he have to give back at least some of his X-Files residuals for that? Yeah. I mean, I feel like no Forrest J. Ackerman, there is no X-Files
exactly.
in some way.
Fergus, look it up. If you don't know who Forrest J. Ackerman is by this time tomorrow morning, I'll be very disappointed.
Was. I think he's dead.
It was. Yeah, it is past tense. I think I used past tense there. It's okay. It's an octopus octopi moment, or octopodies. Let's quickly go around the studio.
By the way, if you do ever visit Los Angeles, Alex, which I know the terms of your extradition will not allow, but if you ever were to visit here, going and visiting Forrest J. Ackerman's house and his estate personal memorabilia collection is something that we need to arrange, because apparently it's the best science fiction fantasy memorabilia collection in existence. Famous, and it's still at the house.
As we said, famous monsters of filmland. Let's start off with Emily. Have you enjoyed the programme?
Yeah.
Good. Ready for tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Excellent. 8 a.m. Eloise, did you enjoy your programme?
Of course.
You're not coming in the morning, are you? Be asleep.
No.
And Fergus, okay?
Yeah, all good. Ready for tomorrow morning.
So we might be joined by Melissa Wilde then. Who knows? What about yourself, Josephine Westlake? Your debut on the production, has it been good for you?
Yeah, it has. It's been an interesting experience.
Splendid. Coming back again?
Yeah, definitely. I would like to do that. And probably a bit more prepared.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why we send out these running orders. You know, it's not, it's optional. Ben, what about yourself?
Yeah, as ever.
It's taking a swig of gin now just to actually kill the pain. It's okay.
I wish it was.
Yeah, it's a joyful. Back tomorrow morning?
Of course.
Yep. Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, in France. Jordan Rowntree, Martin Allen, Technical Director of ESF, Discussing Electric Vehicles, and the Head of Engagement of the British Science Association, Yvette Modinu, will be talking about how we should be getting more involved with children and science and so on. William Sitwell will be with us. There's Bramham Horse Trials as well. That's it. Can we all wrap up with Happy Ascension Thursday? Let's keep it to the theme of ascending in all sorts of ways. It's Happy Ascension Thursday. Phil, take the lead in this. A 1, 2, 3.
Happy Ascension Thursday.
Yay! That's the kind of stuff that we like. Happy trails. Maybe.